Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Ewan Murray. How are you, Ewan?
I'm very well, thanks, Chris.
Excellent, excellent. You're the PR man for the Wine Society.
That's right, it's a hell of a job.
Yeah, so does that involve going around talking to people saying, this is a very nice wine, come and join the Wine Society?
Well, it's that kind of thing, but it's twofold. One, it's to consumers, and the other one, it's to the press. So yep. Talking to people. I mean, I've been the tastings and events manager at the Wine Society for 9 years, and certainly the job that you described there about talking to people about the wine was very much at the forefront of what I do.
Yep.
Whereas now, I tend to meet the public a little less and meet writers, journalists and the like a little bit more, but in the same way, still telling them about the wines and telling them about what the society does and hoping that word gets out there.
Okay, so we'll talk about the society in a minute. You said you've been here with the Wine Society now for 9 years.
Yeah, 9, 10 years now,
That's quite a long time for a press man to be anywhere, really. It's like, it takes about 3 years for all your disasters to be held responsible for you and then move on, isn't it?
Absolutely. Well, hopefully there's not too many disasters, but we look up and see the planes flying over the warehouse on the Luton flight path and think that what could be the worst thing that happened, and that's going to be pretty unlikely, so we're quite comfortable with that.
Okay. Just before we get into talking about the Wine Society, tell me a bit about yourself. Are you a press man? Are you a wine guy? What's your background?
Well, my background, going back to uni days, is languages and music. So I studied French and music, and I lived in French-speaking Switzerland for 4 years. 1 year as an English teacher, 3 years as a ski bum. And on coming back to the UK, decided to do something where I could use my languages. I was working as an export salesman. For various products, traveling the world using the languages. And I kind of fell into wine, really. So in 1999, when a friend of mine who worked for Percy Fox in London, now Giustarini and Brooks and part of the Diageo group, suggested that I get my CV in because there was a job going there that would suit. Thankfully, I got that job. I was there for 5 years on the sales and marketing side. And then I'd always driven past the Wine Society, which is 5 miles away from where I live, and thinking it would be great to get a job there. And one came up, and I applied and got it. And that was in 2004 as head of tastings and events. I did that for 9 years and have now gone full-time over to the PR side.
Do you have any wine qualifications, or is it all on the job drinking?
A lot of it's on the job drinking, but but on the job tasting and spitting, of course.
Yep.
As many people in the wine trade, gone through the certificates and the diploma of the WSET. Yeah.
So have you gone through with that? Have you?
I've gone through all of that.
Yeah. Oh, excellent, excellent. Let's talk a wee bit about the Wine Society. Just in your own words, what is the Wine Society?
Well, the Wine Society, as well as being one of the leading wine merchants in the UK, is pretty special because of its business model. It's cooperative in its nature. I mean, we were founded way back in 1874 as the International Exhibition Cooperative Wine Society. It's a lot easier to say just the Wine Society when you've had the odd spit and swallow.
Yep.
We are a leading wine merchant online in majority. Mail order in origin, and we service around about 125,000 active customers, or members as we call them, in the UK. A little bit of export, but only a little. And at any one time, we've got about 1,200 wines on the list, so there's a big selection for our members to choose from.
Yeah, okay. And you said they're your members. I was reading on your website, to become a member, it's £40?
That's right. It's a £40 one-off lifetime membership, if you like, which actually can be bequeathed to your next of kin on your passing. So we have some three-figure share numbers which started out in 1875, which are still in use today on their fifth or sixth generation of use. So that's a nice touch, and it just keeps that cooperative family feel going.
Yep. That gives you a share in the company, is that right?
That gives you a share in the company, which means that for your life you are a member of the cooperative. But you're also an employer, if you like. I'm self-employed because I'm a member and I also work for the Wine Society. But it gives people a stake in the company and adds a bit of loyalty to us. So we're not just a wine merchant down the road or on the phone or on the web. there's a little bit of a little bit of ownership there from the customers or members. Which
do the members vote on who's going to be the CEO and the board and all that?
The board. Well, the way we're run by. If you like, there's two levels of management. We have a committee of members which has a helicopter view of the whole running of the society. So effectively, we have a board of between 8 and 12, depending on who's been co-opted, non-execs, and they oversee the executive board. So the executive board is chosen like any other would be. The CEO is employed by the committee of non-execs on behalf of the members.
Okay, so it's a bit unusual for a wine merchant to make you pay to join there to sell wines. I'm sure a lot of merchants would love that. But you seem to have attracted the members. Why do you think people want to buy wines from you guys? What's your USP apart from the fact that you've got to pay to join?
Well, apart from that, I mean, the paying to join is £20 for your share, which becomes the working capital of, within the working capital of the company, and also a £20 premium to sort of kickstart your membership through the mailings we would be sending you, etc. But once you get into the Wine Society, members realize that because of our nature and we're cooperative, we're not profit maximizing. Therefore, we're able to give services and wines, quality in both those areas at a price that people can afford. Because we don't have any, corporate shareholders leaning over our shoulders, breathing down our necks, wanting to drive the profits for their dividends. The dividends, if you like, are what the members end up drinking.
Okay. You don't see the Wine Society as a brand or a, I think many places, you know, I know about it and I've recommended you guys to a number of people, but you don't actually see that brand in the supermarket, or not supermarkets, but in magazines or anything like that. How do you reach your members?
Well, we've increasingly have on the PR front got a lot of press mentions to do with our wines. So people who are members and who are not members are seeing our wines in the national press on a Saturday and Sunday, in their regional press, on blogs, etc. But we reach either through that or very much on member gets member. We're a cooperative and we've always been based on a sort of word of mouth. So people recommending us to their friends. And that's how it's continued. Not only are we not profit maximizing, but we're not growth maximizing either. We don't want to grow too big, too fast, because that wouldn't be of any benefit to our members. We'd have to maybe change the scale at which we're doing things and make step changes, and that would affect the way that we do business with our members. So we rather go at a sort of slow and steady pace. Having said that, you know, over the last few years we've had higher growth than we've expected, and we believe that's down to getting more coverage out there in the magazines and in the papers, but also the fact that our offering is getting better and better all the time. And as we get more members, we therefore have more members to recommend other people becoming members. And it's very much that. It's a member get member approach.
You're UK based. Do you have any sort of offices anywhere else?
We have one partner company, if you like, in northern France, in Montreuil-sur-Mer, which is just inland from Le Touquet, about 45 minutes south of Calais. And there we have a small selection. About a quarter of the wines that are available to members here in the UK are available off the shelf on the spot, of about 200, 250 wines. But members can also pre-order and get the wines delivered over there so that they can benefit from the lower French duty rates. So there's a fair few members who will avail themselves of that service. There are even some people in Kent who probably use it as their local off license.
Yeah, you can get some cheap deals, can't you?
Indeed.
Is that the classic booze cruise, really, isn't it? That's been hammered a bit. You're saying earlier there's only you and Majestic now in Calais or nearby.
That's right. There's only two left. It was hammered, you know, when the recession came, 2008, 2009, the supermarkets and other merchants pulled out. It was obviously something we looked at, but because we treat it not as a profit center, but as a service to members, and there were still many members using that service, then we decided to stick with it. And that's paid dividends because, you know, we're now back to 2006, 2007 business levels. Sort of that part of the recession, as far as our members are concerned, is over. And we're getting good results out there.
Excellent, excellent. And how do you reach your rest of your members there? Because you guys are in Stevenage, which is north of London.
Yeah.
You know, someone goes online or whatever, buys a case of wine from you guys.
Mm-hmm.
Do they have to come down to Stevenage to collect it, or
they can come down? Yeah, they can come down to Stevenage and collect it because we do have our cellar showroom here,
yeah.
And you can stroll around and buy the single bottle if you wish, as long as you remember. But we have UK wide distribution. We have our own network of vans, 25 to 30 vans with our own drivers. So every now and again, you'll see a Wine Society liveried van shoot it up the motorway or up your road.
Yep.
And then we also deal with a network of couriers in the UK.
Oh,
we
cover,
couriers, yeah, we yeah. do use couriers as well. But over half of what we do is delivered by our own van drivers. We have depots across the UK. We have 8 depots on mainland UK and one with a long-term relationship with a freight forwarder in Northern Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
So we cover the whole of the UK. And being a cooperative, making sure we want to treat members fairly, delivery is free wherever you happen to be in the UK, whether it be Muckle Flugger in the far north of Scotland or the Isles of Scilly. Delivery is free.
Yeah, okay. I noticed, I had a look around your showroom showroom, wine cellar, shop, whatever
yeah,
you want
yeah.
to call it beforehand. And I was particularly interested in price comparisons. I was trying to work out what your pricing was mm-hmm. like. And you've actually got a couple of wines that we use in our tastings, so we purchase and we know what the sort of high street prices
yeah.
are. And you're not too bad, actually. You're cheaper than we would sell the wine at.
Yeah.
So, and if that includes delivery as well, which is mm-hmm. not too bad. Can you buy by the individual bottles, or is it always mixed case if you're...
You can buy by the single bottle.
If I'm an Aberdeen and I want...
If you're an Aberdeen, you want a single bottle. Anything under 12 bottles of within one order, you'd pay a £5 surcharge. But anything 12 bottles or above, or of £75 value. So if you had 3 wines of 25 quid each, or even 1 wine of 75 quid, then you could get delivery free of charge there. If you're a new member, so if you've just joined, in order to wean you onto the Wine Society, then it's free delivery for 6 bottles.
For
the first 6 months of your membership.
For 6 months. Okay, that's not too bad at all. Okay, let's talk a wee bit about the wines in more detail. And I had a look around the store. And you are very French-centric. You know, it's like, I would say at least half of it's France.
It's about half, yes.
Yeah, and then right. I had a look at the buyers, because you've got a good range of buyers on your website, and they
yep.
all seem to sort of talk about Burgundy or Rhone Valley or Bordeaux or whatever as their sort of primary lust, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And the other regions seem to be very much a secondary tier, in my impression.
Yeah.
You say that's fair?
No, I would say that, I think historically the Wine Society, because when we started up in 1874, you know, France was not the be-all and end-all, but very much, you know, French wine was to the fore. And in fact, really, until 10, 15 years ago, France was still the number one for the UK consumer. But as the new world has come up, particularly the sort of lower value branded items have come in, then, you know, the new world has had a much bigger say. Now, the Wine Society will always look for quality wherever it goes. And when we find quality in the new world, and we do often, then we'll put that into the range as well. And in other areas of Europe. So France, maybe 50% of what we do. That hasn't changed much, recently. As we've grown, it's remained 50%, but a lot of that growth in other areas, you know, has come up as well. So Spain is our fastest growing area. We're doing a lot with Australia and New Zealand, and South Africa is really up and coming at the moment. Portugal, although small, perfectly formed and doing very well. So there's a lot of other areas that we deal with. In fact, we were pretty much, I think if you look at our wine lists, even back in the 1870s, there was Australian claret, as they called it way back then.
Yeah, yeah.
There was Californian Zinfandel and Argentine Malbec even then in the 19th century. So we've never been backwards in coming forwards when we're looking for new areas too. But it's got a lot to do with our clientele, if you like. Our members historically have been not wine buffs necessarily, but maybe liking to think they know a little bit more than the average consumer, and more or less they do, then it's good to, it's good to follow what they like too. But we're always pushing the boundaries and putting new things in there as well. Take Chile, for example, where for the last 8 years we've been the IWC Chilean Wine Merchant of the Year for 7 out of those last 8 years. So, there's a lot out there, and we're just expanding our buying team at the moment, and our new buyer is taking responsibility specifically for North America, Australia, and New Zealand. So we are very much looking at those areas too.
Okay. What about your own label? You do have your own label.
We do. We have two bands of own label wines. Yeah.
What are they?
We have the Society's own label, which we use for particular regions or particular styles of wines. So it's quite sort of a broad brushstroke. The Society's Full French Red, the Society's Claret, the Society's Chianti, those sort of things, the Society's Australian Chardonnay. So quite generic, but looking for real value for money at the lower end of the price scale. So you're talking, you know, between £5.25 and £9, I would say, for that. And members look to that to get a good feel for what a wine should be like from that given area.
A reference point.
A reference point, if you like. But an everyday drinking reference point, if you like. We also have the Society's Exhibition range, which we launched in 1999 to coincide with our 125th anniversary. And that's very much being more specific. You're narrowing it down to certain appellations, whether it be the Society's Alsace Riesling or the Society's Victoria Shiraz or the Society's Limmery Valley Chardonnay from Chile, etc. And there we're looking for what we deem to be benchmark. So if somebody wants to know what a wine from that area should typically taste like, then that's what we're aiming to do with the exhibition range. And we work with a whole host of great growers and well-known producers. Chile, it's Conchi Toro. Alsace, we were with Jos Meyer and Hugel. In the Rhone, with Jaboulet. And in Australia, with people like Bleasdale and Mount Langi Giran, and those sort of guys. So we've got a lot of big hitters as far as the producers are concerned. And we're able to put our buying power and their expertise together to come up with some fantastic representations of what the wine should be like within that range.
The co-op system has had a bit of a hammering in the press recently, particularly with the Co-op Bank, whose CEO quit recently, complaining that it was ungovernable.
Yeah.
I'm not sure exactly why, but how do you guys feel about sort of some of that bad mouthing in the press about your structure, really?
Yeah, well, it's not so much about our structure. I think it's been very clear that it's the way that the Co-op Bank was run at the top, to be honest. News out today about, mis-selling of PPIs and the like, which has affected the whole of the banking world, really. I think when
Co-op Bank, I didn't read
the Co-op Bank, yeah, that was just.
They were mis-selling PPIs.
Well, there's been a little bit put to one side to cover for that. And all these things are sort of coming out of the woodwork with the bank. But when you look at the rest of the co-op movement, on the food side, on the funeral side, on the various parts of the co-op, I think overall it still seems to be pretty well managed. You look at their offerings of food and wine, which are pretty good from a supermarket point of view, very good and ethically sourced, etc. So it's working from that side. But from our point of view, rather than looking at the cooperative, when you're looking at UK co-ops as a whole, it's a very different kettle of fish. We're one of the largest UK co-ops, if you come outside of
the... But you're not a part of the co-op in any
absolutely
way.
Absolutely, no way. When we were founded in 1874 at the Albert Hall after a wine fair when there was a whole bunch of wines left over, and they needed drinking up. And so a group of gentlemen got together and decided to create a few lunch events in order to sell these wines. And it was such a success that they formed a mutual in order to be able to continue to source such wines. And that's why that happened at the International Exhibition at the Albert Hall, which is why we're called the International Exhibition Cooperative Wine Society. And it's moved on from then. It's always been governed along those lines, financial prudence all the way. You know, we don't, we've never been at the behest of any financial institution. We've kept ourselves, very well managed on that score. And the oversight from this committee of members I was talking about earlier is, two or three of which are forensic accountants and that sort of thing. It's run very, very tightly and very, very prudently. And our financial director here has been here well over 10 years, knows the ropes inside out, and has got a very good team with him.
If I was a shareholder, can I see the accounts and the summary of?
You
all
can.
That?
You can even come along to the AGM every June in London. No, we're very
good wine.
But and well, there may be a little bit of wine there, but I couldn't possibly comment on that one. It's very clear, very transparent. It's people, members, if they want to know what's going on, and they do want to know, because rightly so, they're shareholders and they should be able to find this out. They will write to the CEO and ask him about information, and we're very open with that sort of thing. You know, we like members to see that they are genuinely getting value for money in our services and in our wines and in the way that we're run. You know, we're a 200 person business here with a £75 million turnover. So we need to be transparent, and we need to have absolute confidence in how we operate, and our members need absolute confidence in how their cooperative society operates too.
Well, I think we'll wrap it up there, Ewan. Thank you very much for your time.
You're very welcome.